Hi, this is John Neal. I'm a professional pumpkin carver, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Look, our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
We're going to talk to some farmers about their thoughts on daylight savings time.
Yep.
We're going to talk to a random person in Arizona who hates daylight savings time.
Correct.
I wish we didn't. Yeah, it's a 20-part series. So,
20,
this
season
is
one.
Go to the next daylight savings time.
This is season one, guys. Season one of 20-part episode. 20 episodes per season, so strap in because we are going to take you on a journey like no other.
Yeah, but back in time.
Wow. But anyway, guys, welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. We are a weekly podcast, if you will, that always focuses on interesting guests and stories and games and just everyday life. But we came off a pretty damn cool week, if I don't say so myself. Last week we had Danny Tamborelli and Lori Beth Denberg, who you guys might know from Pete and Pete or all that. If you grew up watching any Nickelodeon, you definitely saw their faces in what I call the golden age of Nickelodeon. So much so that they have like a channel version of Nickelodeon that plays all the classics. So you can still see Pete and Lori quite often. It was one of my favorite episodes of the year. So go check that out. That was last week.
It was a good one. It was definitely a good one, man.
But we are not here to talk about last week, Mike. We are here to focus on what I believe is year 5 of our Halloween extravaganza. It could be 5. It could be 4. I'm not sure. But I think it's 5. Yeah. And if anything, if it's not 5, we've put out 2. So it's 5 years worth of Halloween content.
That's a good way to say we don't look back at anything and figure out stuff before the show. That's a good way of putting it, Scott.
It's been too long at this point. It's been too long. I can't manage this. In fact, the other day I was looking through some old episodes and I saw a name. I'm like, Ben Brown. Who the hell is Ben Brown? And then I realized he was like a kayaker that we had. We've had a lot of freaking guests on. I think we need to have a grand total at the end of the year. I think we need to total this up.
Yeah, I got the spreadsheet. I got it updated for a few weeks. I did it. I have it up to, I think, mid-2019. But
that goes pretty quick, though. Just checking
it. Yeah.
So, yeah, because someone the other day asked me, they're like, hey, it's like you guys have a lot of guests. I'm like, oh yeah, a couple. I was trying to like ballpark the number, and it's got to be a 250 guests.
I think it's a little more than that. I'm bringing up the spreadsheet right now. If you want to entertain our guests, why do nothing,
dude? Don't
much like most weeks.
Don't put that pressure on me. But yeah, we've had a lot of guests on. So yeah, maybe it is over 250. But it's been a lot. And tonight we got a good Halloween guest in too. But we'll get to him shortly. Ooh, I just got.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to count the repeats. I had a formula for it, but as of episode 245, I list 338. But again, that doesn't subtract our returning guests. So
true. And you know, we've had a lot of episodes with, so what number did you say? 338. Wow. Jeez. 338 and 264 episodes. I like it. But anyway, guy, that was an attempt at anyway, guys. But that came out as, hey, guy. Hey. Apparently,
you were trying to do your southern auctioneer voice there for a minute.
See, I think it almost came out as Japanese, like, hey, guy. Like,
and then, no, that's racist. And then you can't run for office, Scotty. Oh, okay. So well, let's go with auctioneer.
But anyway, guys, happy Halloween, everybody. Good time of year. Fall is well underway. I have certainly this Halloween, this weekend, was the most Halloween I've done in, and I haven't been to a Halloween party or dressed up in probably 5 years.
That long, huh?
I don't know. I can't remember dressing up as anything for Halloween in a while, or going to an adult party of any sorts. Maybe 4 years, 5 years. Because me and the wife always talk about it. We're always like, yeah, we should go to a Halloween party this year. And then I feel like every time Halloween rolls around, we're like, eh, I don't feel like getting costumes and whatnot. But
you're in sweatpants looking at each other like, I ain't going trick-or-treating.
Hold on, you're breaking up a lot here.
Am I?
Good time.
Here, let's try again.
Hello?
Oh, you sound good again. Sort of.
No.
But so we got invited to two Halloween parties in the same day, of course, and two close friends, my one friend Jackie. So one was more of like a, there was a lot of kids around, so it was more of like an adult and kid kind of thing. The other one was like pure adult party, and so we're like, we're gonna do it here, so we'll do both parties. So the first one, now I would have done one costume. But the first party had a theme to it. So I was like, oh, man. Oh. So the first party was a Disney. So your wife would have been all in. It was a Disney-themed Halloween party because there was a lot of kids. And they set up like little trick-or-treating booths and whatnot. And originally it was like Disney villains. I'm like, oh, crap. What the hell are we going to be? But then the it loosened up to just Disney theme. So
okay.
So I had no ideas up until probably 4 days ago, and I was like, oh, well, you know, like, we could be the, I have a Boy Scout, because I was going through old stuff, and I'm like, oh, my Boy Scout uniform might still fit, and then, like, something clicked, and I'm like, boom, let's be the kid from Up, and we'll make Alex the old man. So I had to cram myself into my Boy Scout uniform, and had a friend make me a flag and everything, and it worked out pretty well, Now, the reason
it worked out well, it was easy for you, and a hellhole for Alex as she had to run around, try to dress like an old man quickly within 4 days.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, it wasn't too bad. She wore all my clothes anyway. So, like, it was like my big suit jacket. We got her glasses, and that was kind of the extent of it. I had a cane.
I don't remember watching Up and say, look at that old Irish man go.
How do you know what heritage he was?
I mean, he wasn't wearing any flannels. I do know that.
So you just assume all Irish guys just wear flannels? That's racist.
No, I just assume all you wear is flannels, Scotty.
Accurate.
I mean, pretty much I see you in a t-shirt tonight and my mind still can't comprehend and concentrate on the podcast as we speak. I'm like,
so you,
this is weird. I should be looking at a checkerboard right now.
So you are just like picturing me with flannel. So you're just judging me and inserting the fact that I'm not wearing flannel right now and just picturing me in it so you can concentrate.
I can only assume that you're wearing flannel underwear or socks that I can't see, so your body wouldn't reject everything on you.
I'm going to really disappoint you right now because I'm wearing no socks and no underwear at the moment.
Oh, free balling. Like a true Irishman. All right.
Not a thing I often do, but I was pretty sweaty before this and had to take a shower. And I was like, why dirty up another pair of underwear? Because after this, I'm probably going right to bed. So I figured, let's just basketball shorten it up and
being very economic about this.
Exactly.
You know?
Why dirty a pair of underwear? You know, because like I have a limited supply. I don't have endless supply of underwear. Maybe you do, Mike. I'm just, you know, like I know tomorrow morning I got to use and break out a nice clean pair. And those are limited, which means more wash, which means, you know,
put on
a pair from like 6 o'clock where it is like around now. Well, now it's like 7:30, but from 6 o'clock to basically I'm going to go to bed at 10:30, 11 o'clock. So why dirty up a pair?
See, when I got my first paycheck from Verbal Shenanigans, I invested in underwear so I can grab a pair at any point in my life.
How many pairs do you think you have in the rotation?
Supplies.
No, seriously. How many do you think you have in rotation that are wearable? You're not putting on the B squad. Because I have like two or three B squatters. And mm-hmm. I did buy MeUndies, which they're not a sponsor of the show, unfortunately. They do things like Joe Rogan and Bill Burr, but we are comparable according to iTunes.
Oh, that's true.
How many A squad underwear do you have in the rotation that you are like, I'm confident I could pull out a pair? And so if you did no wash and all your underwear was clean, how many days could you go?
Probably 3 weeks.
3 weeks, so like 21 solid pairs of underwear?
Yeah.
That's not bad. I'm probably a little under that. I'm probably like 15, 16 maybe. Mm-hmm. Good pairs of underwear. But the problem is if I do anything like active, it's one of my rules. Once that underwear is worn for longer than like, I don't know, a couple hours, I can't put on the dirty pair of underwear. It's like I could put back on maybe a shirt that's somewhat dirty. I could put on maybe socks if they're not reeking. But underwear, I just can't do it.
Yeah, that's a minimum one day most kind of item. I think I told this story on the podcast, but it was one of those hilarious things from one of my older jobs. There was a gentleman there who did our facilities work, and he's one of those guys, he's all right to talk to, but after about 15 minutes, you're like, all right, enough, go away kind of guys. But I have to admit that why I'm not saying his name is his intelligence level is kind of down there, and it's kind of well known within the company where you just shake your head and all. So this gentleman had to go up. We had multiple facilities, and it was up in Northeast Pennsylvania, our one facility. And he was up there for a few days, and he was getting pissed off, and he was talking to one of my coworkers at the time. He's like, I'm so mad at our boss. He told me I was only up here for a project for a couple hours. He's kept me up here all this week. I've been wearing the same pair of underwear for 4 days now. And he yells this in the room. I wasn't in the room, but and when somebody tells me the story and I know of the guy, I'm like, yeah, he probably yelled it. And they went back to him. They're like, you know, there's Walmart over there. Why don't you expense the company another pair of underwear? Or why don't you wash off your undies in the sink? And his reply to the gentleman is, don't worry, I have them inside out today.
Oh, God.
And every time I've told the story, I always say, all right, let's do the visual. All right, I got side A, day one. I got side B, day two. Now what did he do?
I think maybe his thought process was like, oh, maybe side A mellowed over over the day. So it's almost like it naturally washed itself.
So you think the particles down there just kind of evaporated after he went inside out and it became fresh again?
See, if it got to the point for me where I had to go to side B, after that, I'm going what I am today. I'm just going no underwear for the next couple of days.
Like, yeah.
Horrific.
Add to it the next day he came in, he yelled at the guy because he's like, oh, you told me if I wash it off in the sink and put it on the radiator, it'd be fine and all. Now I'm walking around with wet underwear. And it's like, why are you informing strangers information, my good friend?
And this guy's name is Mike Berlew.
I won't say the guy's name. I do know he just had like a triple heart bypass a couple days ago. So I won't say your name, but I wish you luck, buddy. And I hope you're doing well. And that's why I'm not saying your name, because I don't want to embarrass you if those are the last moments on this planet.
Well, also, like, if he's in the hospital, maybe they could hook him up with a couple new pair of hospital undies.
You figure the nurses, like, he's in a coma. It's like, well, Mr. Jones asked us to do the daily flip.
Change his gown, flip the undies, and check his vitals. Like, you know.
That's why you go to nursing school, people.
So I guess getting us back to Halloween. So, so I did the up thing. We left, and the reason I couldn't wear the same costume because my other costume, I went all in on a Conor McGregor outfit. Okay. And I didn't want to be normal because I get all the time like jokes like, yeah, you look like Conor McGregor because I'm big, pale and Irish and have a beard. And that's kind of.
And you punch people randomly.
Correct. Especially older men, older gentlemen
yep.
only.
Yep.
But I wanted to be if I was going to go Conor, I wanted to go full arrogant lunatic Conor. The first thing that came to my mind was that Mayweather press conference where he wore the. Big white mink with no shirt and floral pants and just a ridiculous outfit. And you know, and this was a bold move because I was going to be shirtless at a Halloween party, which is I don't think I've ever been shirtless at a party on purpose. and I had the key to the whole outfit was to find the tattoos. Because I was not going to draw. Well, actually, there was two. Finding the jacket and finding the tattoos was the hard part. So tattoos I actually found on Etsy, and they were basically stick-on tattoos, and they came pretty quick, but they were not cheap. I paid over $20 a piece for the two.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was either that or, like, have me draw my own whatever
just
that
see,
is.
Like, monkey and figure kitty on your belly button.
Exactly. So I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it. I'm gonna do it right. So I ordered the tattoos. They came, and I was impressed when they came. I'm like, these things look good, man. And so I'll get to the tattoos in a second. And the other part was the furry jacket. I was able to find floral pants on Amazon pretty quickly that looked pretty close to his. And I'm like, all right. Oh, and they were only like – they were probably like $17.
Okay.
And I had shoes already that I thought would make sense. And the only other thing I bought was a fake chain at the Halloween store. But the jacket, I'm looking for men's furry white jacket. And so it was one of two things. It was either like a bazillion dollars because it was an actual fur coat. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing that. Or it was all women's coats that would be way too small for me. You know, I'm a rather large man. So I couldn't find anything. I'm looking on Craigslist, on eBay, and this and that. And eventually I find something on eBay, and I bought it. And I think I was able to get that for like $26. But finding a fuzzy coat. Now, here's the problem with buying this furry coat and looking all over the internet. Now, every pop-up ad I get and every recent search is like men's shag shag jacket, like fur coats, like everything is now it looks like I'm really into like wearing exotic fur costumes or fur clothing.
One of those things where it's like, wow, this place really thinks I put a lot of money into boas.
yeah. I pulled one up before. Where is it? One of the Amazon ads. It was like whatever, like men's fur, something or other. Let me see if I can find it. Amazon. Oh well, I lost it. But it was basically like shag, whatever clothing, shawls and scarves and things like that. I'm like, come on. But costume came out wonderful. It came out really good. I think I posted a picture on our Instagram.
You did.
Yeah. So I also won the costume contest, which was cool.
Oh.
Now, here's the problem. Here's where the problem comes in. So to apply the tattoos, I had to shave my chest and stomach.
Okay.
And I've never done, like, I'll trim up every once in a while, but I have never done full, like, shave and stomach. I did not like it immediately. And, like, today I feel very, like, vulnerable. My clothes kind of feel weird on me. I feel like someone called me a naked mole rat, like a mole rat. Like
gotcha.
I don't feel right. I don't know if like, have you ever done fully shaved down on your chest and stomach?
I have never done fully shaved on my chest. I do know a while ago I was under. I don't know what I was thinking. I had a couple of drinks in me, and I said to myself, I need to trim my eyebrows. And I accidentally just took them both off. And
no, you didn't. When was this?
I'm going to say about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, okay, okay.
I was definitely Jersey, and I think I had a couple in me. And,
was this within the time that we've been podcasting?
It could have been. I mean, I went a month where I just wore my glasses and nobody seemed to like question or notice I didn't have any eyebrows. But it was one of those, I'm like, all right, I'll go in the lowest setting and they'll just give me a nice trim. And I'm like, oh, after the first one, I'm like, well, I got to take the other one off and I just got to strategize.
I feel like you were definitely like a little loaded talking in the mirror like, you owe me. And then you like, you didn't like the way your you don't want to mess with me face looked or your character looked. And you're like, he would have smaller eyebrows. Let's adjust that. And things got out of hand.
It wasn't a character thing. I think I was actually somewhat depressed. And I'm like, oh, my eyebrows look horrible. Maybe this will make me feel better. It did not make me feel better.
No, I'm assuming that would just go make you feel a whole lot worse when you have no eyebrows.
Yeah. So if you noticed me for a month not wearing contacts, just wearing glasses, that was probably when.
Thank God.
I accidentally shaved.
Thank God you found your wife, because you might have missing body parts at this point.
Right, probably. You know, I'd be like, you know what? These fingernails are too long. Uh-oh. Well, I'm gonna look silly with 9 fingers. Might as well take them all off.
What do I need 2 nipples for? One's enough. So,
hey, 10 finger Frank, I beat you.
So I feel very weird. I don't know how long it's gonna take to kind of grow back to where I feel confident either, because I've never really gone full shave before.
Like, do you feel if you went to like the gym and had to change that you would feel embarrassed taking off your shirt?
No, I don't feel that, but I do feel like being hairless shows a lot more, right? Like, it feels like I can't hide any fat behind my my fur patch. I have to, you know, maybe it's just maybe I'll just have to get in better shape or try to work out more, because like I don't like this whole bald thing going on here. Now,
I like how shaving your chest made you feel fat, but not going an entire evening without a shirt on didn't blink an eye to you.
No, not at all. I feel like the coat, the furry coat, kind of was like a buffer. Like, you know, it wasn't full shirt off. It was like a channel down the middle was exposed. And the tattoos made me feel a little hidden too, you know. But here's the problem. So going to 2 parties, one starts to drink a little bit. Okay. People want to do shots. All of a sudden you're Conor McGregor at a party. What do people want to do shots of? Whiskey.
And whiskey. Yeah.
So what was the prize for winning best costume? Little whiskey bottles. I started to pomp them around. So now, get pretty loaded at the party, come home, and I just decide that, it was a good idea for – I wanted to ask my wife to take these Conor-esque pictures. I mean, these are not the ones I posted. This was way later in the night. I had no shirt on. I'm bloated from tons of beer. These are not pretty. And I'm taking these poses. I look at one. I'm FaceTiming my friend. Like, you know, like I look at one. I am complete. My eyes look like they're crossed. I have the chain on the dog. I'm sitting with the dog. and then there's the whole, you know, next morning, one, seeing the pictures, and two, feeling kind of like crap and having to try to get these tattoos off of me.
Oh,
so they didn't come off like, oh, just going in the shower. And so I was scrubbing. I came out like completely pink. I had to do it in like 2 shifts basically to get them all off. So needless to say, it was a little weird waking up like – so I had the confidence of McGregor on Saturday night.
Uh-huh.
And then Sunday morning I realized I was a hairless, fake tattooed, lots of embarrassing pictures of me. And that's kind of how I rolled into Sunday.
Basically, you went from McGregor pre-Mayweather fight to Mayweather post. Or,
to Conor post-Khabib. So I continued the the fall festivities the next day, and this is kind of lead into our guest. We'll get him on. But we did pumpkin carving. We had 10 people over, and we all carved pumpkins. And I gotta say, my pumpkin came out pretty good. I carved a moose. And my one buddy, he's like a carpenter kind of guy, like real trade. He's like one of those guys who could focus attention to detail. And my fear is always when I'm carving pumpkins, like I have a problem with like negative space, like cutting out what you're supposed to, like the opposite of what you're actually would think you have to cut out, because you have to think of the light coming through. So I'm thinking this whole time I'm carving these antlers and I'm just going to cut a moose's head right off. But it wasn't me. My friend Kevin decided to carve a beer, like a stein of beer, and it just came out looking like an old NFL face mask, like, and everybody, we just ripped him to shreds basically for 5 hours about his awful pumpkin. This morning we're just sending pictures to him, like, people were like, what is that, Iron Man? I got, someone thought it was Acropolis or whatever that is, the town in Greece with the pillars.
Okay.
just ripped him to shreds on that. So I didn't feel, at least someone else was got to feel a little embarrassment on this Halloween weekend here. But I think
I probably returned with shut up, hairless pink chest.
Yeah, well, you know. But I think this is a good segue into our guest we have on tonight. Now, my moose, I was pretty proud of my moose. My one buddy did a ridiculous Indian skull. It looks crazy. But we're going to bring on a professional today, a professional pumpkin carver. Mike, I know you carve pumpkins. We carved pumpkins one of the Halloween podcasts we actually did. I don't remember what yours was or mine was, but I think I did a Verbal Shenanigans pumpkin.
You did a Verbal Shenanigans one. You tried to do a Mets one. I think it cut in a little too deep and it fell through. I just did like a kind of a face with like X's for eyes.
Yeah. Well, this guy can do much better than that. If you go on and check out his stuff, it's pretty phenomenal. He's been on Food Network and a million different things. And he does basically pumpkin carving for a good chunk of the year. And for a living, and he's one of the best in the world. So we're going to bring Mr. John Neal on the podcast right now. Give him a call. All right. So, John, thanks for, first off, giving us a few minutes here on the show. I couldn't think of almost a more fitting guest for – we always try to have some interesting Halloween guests on. A couple years ago, we had an exorcist on a couple years ago. Oh, so
that's great.
Oh, yeah. We had an exorcist on. We had some guys from horror movies and things like that. So kind of delved into something different this year, and I went on a Google wormhole, and a lot of your amazing work popped up. So thank you for giving us a few minutes here.
Oh, you bet.
So John, how does one go from casual pumpkin carver once a year, you know, like putting a jack-o'-lantern on their steps with triangle eyes and the cutout mouth with a couple teeth, to getting so into it that you have these world-class pumpkins that look like, they don't even look like they're actual vegetables. Like, they don't look like pumpkins. Yeah. They look like they are amazing pieces of art.
Thanks. It was kind of a weird thing. I always liked pumpkins. You know, as you have that fascination as a kid and Halloween, and then you're trying to do the best, you know, triangle-eyed jack-o'-lantern that you possibly can. And so when I was real little, we went to like a pumpkin show in Versailles, Indiana, where my grandma lived.
Right.
And I saw giant pumpkins there, and that was, you know, super cool. So my love of pumpkins has been around for a long time. And then in the early 2000s, I started growing some in my backyard. And so then I'm just carving a lot of jack-o'-lanterns. And then my wife is like, hey, would you carve some for our office? You know, we're having a contest and I want to win. So I'm like, sure. And no problem. So I'm carving these tiny little desktop pumpkins and then painting them and doing other things. And that took off. And then fast forward to one of my friends was doing some pumpkin carving, more of like a bas-relief style.
Mm-hmm.
And And he said, hey, you know, there's this show called Halloween Wars on Food Network. You know, why don't you try out and you could be the cake artist on the show. And I'm like, you know, I hear like a record scratch in my mind, and I'm like, cake artist, you know, I'm picturing like little marshmallow figures and stuff. And like, I'm like, you know, I don't really like this idea, but, you know, maybe there's something here. So I called a producer back. Or he said, hey, you know, call the producer. So I called her and I said, you know, I don't like the idea of being a cake artist. And he wanted me to team up. And she's like, well, you know, we don't do it. You can't pick your own teams. You know, we'll place you. So if you want to be a pumpkin carver, do a video and send it in. And so I'm like, okay, wow. You know, I'm like, well, you know, how much time do we have? And she's like, well, the competition's about 5 hours. You've got 5 hours to do something great. So I'm like, oh boy. Okay. And I'm like, you know, I'd heard people using Dremel tools would be the best tool. And I had wood carving tools. And just a side note here. I grew up as an artist, and after college, I realized that in addition to being like,
hold on. Oh, shoot.
Stan Winston Studios, which if you don't know, they're the ones responsible for Aliens, Terminator, Predator, Jurassic Park. So I got to jump on with all these fantastic artists and really get like a hardcore artist boot camp. And so that, so I had that in my back pocket. So, nice. So then cutting back to this, I have all these tools and I'm like, well, you know, I had heard about like, there was one guy that was carving pumpkins. And he was pretty brand new as far as I knew. And that was Ray Villafane, who's a amazing artist. And he works with a lot of, talented artists around the world. And so, I saw his work and I said, oh, he's using the sculpting tools. And so that was like the epiphany. I'm like, okay, well, here we go. So, so I tried the Dremel tool and I set up, and maybe I think that I did the first time lapse pumpkin carving video on YouTube. And so I carved this crazy pumpkin. It was like I went to like Trader Joe's, which is a grocery store around here, and they sell like the soccer ball sized pumpkins. And I carved this thing that looked like a crazy Pac-Man with teeth and big lips. And, my cousin put it on, Reddit, and it made the front page. And then, another person wrote about it in Wired magazine. And then that video took off, and my brothers were pretty shocked at how quickly it was climbing back. I think it was like, I don't know, 2008, 2009. And so anyway, so that went crazy, and I cut another video for the production at Halloween Wars, and I'm like, great, you know, come on board. So we shot the first season, or the, you know, season three of Halloween Wars. And, after that, I thought, well, you know, I really enjoyed the rush. It was kind of like, rock climbing, if you've ever done that. Mm-hmm. And we didn't win. So that's a spoiler there, but we made it almost to the end. So then, on season four, they asked us back for season four. And then I was like, at this point, I had already decided that I was going to take this pro, but it was kind of like that moment when you're making this decision that, you know, I'm going to become high profile with this. And it's crazy. And I had thought, you know, I mean, it'd be like, if you were good at a lot of different things and then all of a sudden you decided to do something crazy because it resonated so well, you know, it's like you try and do a lot of things and then you hit all these roadblocks And it's like, well, no, you probably shouldn't do that after all, because it just seems like there's too many obstacles, like the universe is saying you shouldn't do this. And then this comes along, and here I've worked on all these movies and TV shows, and the one thing that all of a sudden I get recognition for is pumpkin carving. I just can't laugh. I'm like, well, okay, so this is it, you know. And I mean, if my parents were still alive, I can just imagine, like, you know, going to them and say, hey, Mom and Dad, I think I'm going to become a professional pumpkin carver.
Yeah.
My mom would have probably rolled over dead. And at least they both would have rolled over anyway. But you know, it was a surprisingly great thing, because I started to go and do some local events, and then I went and did an event in Indiana, and it was when I realized you know, the carving was almost magical, because in art school the professors would say, you know, if you can get somebody to look at your artwork hanging on a wall for 5 minutes, that's like that's a huge feat. And and I thought, you know, I'm having people bring lawn chairs and spend the entire day parked right in front of me and watching me carve a giant pumpkin. You know, they're, it's shocking.
Yeah.
And now it's like people come and they do their family Halloween pictures by the pumpkin I've carved every year. So I've watched these kids grow up, and it's become, you know, kind of an amazing thing. And then of course, then there's the videos that I do for different companies that then they go viral. I did this one video for EHAL, which was this 300 pound clown that I carved, and the video, and they put it on, it was for Facebook. It was right when Facebook was like, hey, we're gonna do these videos and we're gonna stream live. So we did like a long live streaming session, and that went pretty well. And then they put the video out, and that did okay. I mean, it went viral, but kind of like with like five numbers. and then somebody downloaded it, and they recut the beginning of it slightly, and then put some different music to it and uploaded it, and it was in the millions. And then somebody downloaded that, re-uploaded it on theirs, and then that thing took traction. And just, I mean, I think it got like 60 million views. Yeah, it was nuts. And like Easter time, I was, you know, I would see it still floating around, you know, it was still, but
it's awesome.
So yeah, so that's kind of how it happened. And so now it's like July rolls around, and you know, and I'll start getting calls, and then in October it's
insane.
Pretty yeah. Nuts. Yeah.
So I mean, being an artist, tell us about the vessel itself, the pumpkin. I mean, how sensitive is it to work on? Is it something where if you can make a mistake that you can fix it?
Yes, it's there is a slight margin for forgiveness. So there's different pumpkins. The coolest looking orange pumpkins that are still, you know, familiar to everyone, they're called wolf pumpkins, and they've got this like giant, super thick stem that has a lot of character. And a lot of farmers don't grow it, I think, because you don't get as many per vine. At least they don't grow them out here in California. And then I think the other varieties are like Howden and stuff. So carving those has kind of a consistency of carving like a slightly harder apple. The great thing is that you can use super glue to attach pieces together. So if you want a big schnoz on it, you get a second pumpkin, which you can call a donor pumpkin, and you can cut pieces from that and glue it to the your other pumpkin as you're working with it. But usually I'll take some toothpicks and then some super glue and then smack on a nose or beef up a chin or ears or anything that you want to do that way. And then you can also use other vegetables like carrots and like radishes to make irises or like a tongue. Butternut squash is a good, you know, all these different colors. And you can basically splice the two together and have different colored eyeballs with irises and pupils and a lot of cool stuff, horns, teeth. And then carving giants, like I think most people are familiar with Big Mac's pumpkins. Those look kind of like, they don't really look like pumpkins. They look like giant orange squash. But they carve like a cantaloupe. And the white ones carve a little bit more like, or they have more of the consistency of a pear. So they're softer and just have a smoother consistency.
So now when you got into this and you started realizing like, oh wow, like I'm like you said before, you're getting recognized for for pumpkin carving. You do all this other stuff. Do you jump into it full force? Like, okay, fine, I'm pumpkin carving now. Or are you still doing all different other types of art and your other stuff as that's going on at the same time?
See, that's the problem. I work on a television show also. And then I'm doing this all on the weekends and the evenings.
Yeah.
So before I was freelancing probably for about a decade or maybe a little longer, and then I had an opportunity to jump on the show, and then I just have managed to work both, and then I haven't done any great strides in building my brand other than, you know, maybe a few viral videos, you know, a year.
Right.
And then I haven't made any time to go back on any Food Network shows either. But, did I answer your question or did I totally go off on the wrong direction?
No, I think you nailed it. you're making all these things. What is the time commitment to that? Like, are you just like at home? Like you said, you're working on the weekends. Are you just grabbing pumpkin after pumpkin, making different things? Or are you doing this by request? Like, are people hiring to do different things?
Well, in the beginning, I had an opportunity where I could just make whatever I wanted, which was a great release because I'm always making stuff for everyone else.
Yeah.
But now I'll get some orders in. Those people that can, you know, get in touch with me early enough that have, you know, some big projects, then I try and lock those in. And then there'll be a few that might squeak in, but it can get a little bit tricky trying to juggle everything. And each carving, I mean, it can take anywhere from 5 hours to, I think the longest one was about 17.
No.
It was, it was painful. It was painful. And I thought I'd never again.
But, which one was that? What was it?
Last year, there's a music artist by the name of Vinny Blanco. I think I said his name right. And I had to carve a 600-pound pumpkin to look like him. But it started as they said, hey, do kind of a caricature of him. And so I did a caricature of him, and then his entourage took a snapshot of it and sent it to him or sent it to some other important people. And then they got nervous about it. And so then they wanted me to then dial it in to make it look not like a caricature, but to be more realistic. So ultimately, that's what we ended up with. But that took an additional 5 hours of work to get it, to change it to that. And And I was like, oh man, never again. That was work. But, and there's a time lapse of it somewhere, but I've never seen it. So I'm sure that there's, you know, me having a temper tantrum, you know, I can't get this right.
Now, with these bigger projects, are you the only one working on this, or do you have any kind of team that helps you out with, like, smaller features or anything?
Well, you know, I haven't put together a team yet, and ultimately, I think that will happen. I've been watching how other people have handled their events, and I have some ideas for the big picture of how this is all going to come together. But like right now, if I have to deal with a big pumpkin, usually I'll have help, you know, helping me get that pumpkin to and from wherever it needs to go.
Right.
The big ones I like to have on location where they are, and then carve it, and then try and leave it there if I can't. You know, hopefully the people will just be, oh yeah, leave it. You know, and not take it with you, please. So
now, when this season ends, so October, November ends, and you know, I guess you start, like you said, you start ramping it up in July. Is it a sigh of a relief, like okay, I'm done with pumpkins for it? Like, are you sick of seeing pumpkins by the end of, you know, the Halloween autumn season, and able to move back to your other art and your other projects? Is it a relief?
You know, that's funny. Yeah, it is a relief, because I mean, I know that I don't have any more pumpkin related jobs. So, because it's like, I can't rest. So it's like, and you have to make sure that you're good. Like yesterday I was so tired. And I had to work on a sculpture, and I knew that it was probably going to take me all night. But my brain was too tired. So I ended up just falling asleep, and I slept, and I said, okay, well, so tonight I have to, finish one project for, this company AXS, and then get that out, get them all the footage, and then they can edit it into whatever form they want to use it. Which is cool.
Now, has anybody ever tried to ask you to do something else, like carve up a potato or anything like that?
Yes. I've carved, I actually did a project for Lay's, but they changed the flavors. So all of the, I think we did like six or seven potato carvings. And they had a variety of flavors, and we did, I flew out to New York, and we shot these stop motion videos, or time lapse videos. And it was crazy. I carved like a little elephant, and cowboy boots, and a lot of wild things. Oh, I made a potato or a tomato, out of a potato. And some shrimp. Yeah, just what you're like, yes, you know, now I can say I did that.
Yeah.
And let's see, what else have I've sculpted butter. I made a lunar surface out of butter, which was really cool. And I think probably sculpted some people's heads. I've sculpted in chocolate. I've made pineapples into jack-o'-lanterns a few years back for Nickelodeon. Let's see, I've sculpted radishes, butternut squash is a good one to carve. I know I'm just about forgetting everything. Vegetable. Yeah, just
anything that can be carved, it sounds like.
Crayons, all of it.
Now, I'm sure you get this question, you know, it's probably a stereotypical question, but you do all these works over years and years and years, and you have a whole bunch on your website. Is there a personal favorite of yours that you look back and go, like, that's the best, that's the top, that's the mark I have right now, that's my best pumpkin or my best work?
Oh, you know what? It's funny. It's like seeing them all together, it's really cool. I would say that I do have a couple of favorites. I don't even know if I have names for them. There's one that I have on my t-shirts. He has spiked hair. He's like a punk rocker. I did that for like a, there was a Beverly Hills party, and the whole theme was punk, punk rock, so I did it kind of inspired by Sid Vicious.
Nice.
Even though it doesn't look like Sid Vicious, it was kind of like the same kind of like, you know, lip snarl and spiky hair. And it was a good sized pumpkin, and that has good memories. And then there was an 850 pound pumpkin.
Jeez.
That I carved. it was a white one, and it looks kind of like a weird snake head. And I think there's a photo of me laying on top of it, exhausted. But like when I do an event, I don't think it's a good idea to like sit in a chair and carve, because people are there and they want to see action. So you want to entertain and then just make sure that you know you're in shape enough by the time October rolls around, you know, to be able to handle, you know, carving an event and being able to, you know, give people enough time and do the carvings and stuff.
Yeah.
With all the work that you've done and everything, is it still fun while you're doing the art, or is it to the point now where it's almost a job?
It does become a job, but what I have to do is, because like it was more like a tidal wave, like I didn't really realize what had happened. Until there was one day when all of a sudden I got like about 200 or 300 emails, and it was a company called Board Panda had taken all the pictures off of like my Instagram or Facebook or something, and they created a little thing and then they put it out to the world, and all of a sudden I had like some phone calls and this, and then it was the tidal wave. And now I think, you know, looking at it, it's kind of like I have to plan for my own, you know, fun carvings to happen, not in October. It has to happen when it's not October.
Gotcha.
Somewhere between November and January, or maybe February, to do my carvings for the next Halloween.
Jeez.
I know, right?
Huh. I mean, I guess it's a good problem, though, right? You have demand.
Right. It is. I just didn't want to, like, create a team of carvers just because I want to make sure that people know what my, you know, what it is that I carve.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I've seen it where other teams of carvers, that you get confused as to who's really carved what. So, but, yeah, but it is fun. And I think eventually, you know, what I would like to do is just have like a couple big events that I'll just work at and build over the course of years, so that it'll become like one great big attraction.
Mm-hmm.
and be easier to manage everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just the work it seems like you're turning out, I could even just hear it in your voice that you have a lot of stuff on your plate. So we appreciate we appreciate you taking time from carving pumpkins. I assume after this you're gonna get whittling away at something.
Taking time from? I'm carving right now.
All right, well, make us verbal shenanigans pumpkin. That would be cool.
I'm hiding from everyone. It's like, there he is. Work.
But John, thank you for giving us the time. It's really fascinating what you do, and you turn out amazing work. What's the best place for people to either check your workout or see? I know you do a lot more than I'm on your website. I know you do a lot more than just the pumpkins. What's the best place for them to get a kind of a full feel of what you did?
Well, let's see. My website has a lot of variety there, and then also my Instagram, which is John JON_Neill, NEILL.
Awesome. John, thanks so much, and enjoy the Halloween season. Sounds like you'll be pretty busy, but
yes, I will. Well, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I think I hate to say this, Berlo. I don't want to I don't want to upset you.
Okay.
So I'm going to break this to you easy. I'm going to let you. Okay. I think I like his work better than your pumpkin that you did a couple years ago.
I mean, I haven't had thousands of pumpkins in front of me. I mean, if you can buy me like another 999, I'm sure I could put it up.
Don't tempt
somewhat
me.
Somewhat to this level.
Don't tempt me when a truck pulls up to your house and you're like, what the hell is this?
Damn it! I finally got that sponsor! Damn it!
Delivery from Scott. It says 999 pumpkins for Berlew.
Hi, job. Yeah, I gotta quit for a while. Maybe like 8-9 months, if that's cool.
And that's just to get the.
I told you, I'm pumpkin carving.
And that's just to get the pumpkins into the garage. That's just just the time it's going to take. But
Scott, you're not going to believe this, but pumpkins have an expiration date.
Just see you like FaceTiming with flies all around you.
Why have you started? I'll get to it.
But yeah, pretty fascinating. You could hear in John's voice like you could hear that he has a lot to do coming up. Oh God, I got a couple hundred pumpkins to carve, 5 hours at a clip. Like, yeesh. But
one of them love hate things, and you got a feeling like even like when he goes out to eat and all, he's just like pushed around mashed potatoes, and somebody's probably like, "Oh, what you making there? What kind of artwork is this? Is this a new thing? Mashed potato work?
Imagine
you do that year round, you know."
But even better, imagine you're like out to eat with him, and he's like not talking much, and then you look over at his plate, and his mashed potatoes are like a perfect like Abraham Lincoln or something, like like he just made it perfectly.
Yeah, and then you're like, "Hey, you can sell that," and he just like. Throws the plate away. No, never. I don't want to do this anymore.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to. But John Neal, everybody. John Neal. All right, Mike. John Neal. You ever think of going into maybe carving something other than bodies?
No, I mean, the body game's going pretty good, Scott. There's not a lot of people out there that do it. You know? At least that's... What I'm finding out is the authorities are looking for me.
Don't worry. You're in an undisclosed location right now. I won't tell.
Yeah. They'll never find me in Douglasville.
But, brother, what do you got? What do you got? It's Halloween. Well, let's keep this Halloween train going. I don't know if there's a Halloween train, but I assume there could be one.
I'm sure somebody from Sony just heard this and they're like, idea!
Halloween train. All right, what do you got?
What's the concept? Just, they're on a train and murder, you know? Isn't that Murder on the Orient Express? Shut up, you! Well, Scott, as we know, Halloween is a very scary time. And
scary,
when you think
really
scary things, you think of horror movies. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to kind of see... how Scott Brennan would do in a horror movie.
Okay. So
I figure with these latest horror movies, I see two kind of trends going on. One, the final person has to survive with whatever happens to be around. It's not always a natural weapon, but they just tend to survive by just grabbing whatever's around from them.
Okay.
And what I'm also noticing is, there's always a shoehorned celebrity in these movies.
Okay.
So, Scott, I'm going to give you a horror movie scenario, and then I have a little random number generator. I'm going to give you the weapon that you have and the celebrity that's going to be there with you to help you out, and you tell me how you're going to survive.
Okay. Why didn't we create... a random number generator? Like, why, you know, sometimes I wish I just invented something. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, scenario number one, I call the Possessed Children Town. This is like Children of the Corn or The Omen, where you usually break down in your car and you're in this secluded town with kids that are either all blonde or all... having some kind of pagan god they salute to, where they sacrifice people towards. So, Scott,
you're in this possessed town.
Okay.
And you're there with Kato Kaelin.
Does he count as a celebrity anymore?
He got 15 minutes of fame. And all you guys have is your carry-on luggage to survive. How do you survive?
All right. Well, clearly, Kaelin, you know, he's got a he's been around. He's been he knows how to witness murder, and he knows how to make sure that things, you know, maybe get killed or he's able to cover that up. So I figure I'm going to take the luggage. Okay, I'm going to shove Kato Kaelin towards the children horde. I assume they're all coming towards me. And then my plan is to try to crawl into the luggage, zip myself up, and assume they'll just be happy with eating or killing Kaelin and kind of forget about me. And when the coast is clear, unzip myself from the luggage and carry on.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, you did shave your chest, so now you have a little extra room in there to be nice and comfy. So.
I mean, I'm figuring if, you know, it was life or death, I could cram myself into my carry-on. I'm not, zip myself right in, like Frank Reynolds sewed himself into the couch.
All right. Scenario number two is Blood Campground. Much like Friday the 13th or Sleepaway Camp, you're in a woodsy cabin undertones, and you have some sort of maniac killer coming at you, Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're not there alone, Scott. You have Dustin Diamond with you.
Ah.
And you guys have a shovel. How are you going to survive?
So the murder is coming towards the cabin, I guess, coming into the cabin.
Yeah. You've seen enough of these movies to understand the scenario. Just make it up as you go along.
Well, I assume, you know, with a mass killer comes scary noises, comes scary music sometimes. Sometimes even high-pitched noises, okay? Some might even say a screech.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Don't really know what I'm going to do with him, but I assume that maybe he, you know, maybe we can make our own screeching noises with Screech. We could use Screech, okay? Almost as, you know, like there's a bird called like a mockingjay or like that he mimics sounds of other birds to try to survive, to try to throw them off. He makes sounds of a predator. So I'm thinking as the killer is coming towards the cabin, I'm going to have Screech make screeching noises, okay, to kind of scare off the killer. And then I'm just going to straight use the shovel to dig my way, because usually cabins are dirt floors or not much, dig my way out of the cabin while keeping the door locked, meaning that the killer thinks I'm in the cabin if he's not scared by Screech's noises, and I'm going to dig my way out and run the other way.
Oh, very nice. I didn't know you had that good of a digging skill, Scott.
Dude, please, come on. You know how many times I've dug a hole?
4.
I don't know how you knew that, but it's very accurate. Very accurate. Know,
we've been doing this for a while.
No.
All right. Next one is a spaceship. Scott, you're...
Spaceship?
Yeah, well, you're flowing now in the middle of space. No one can hear you scream. And there's movies like Alien or Hellraiser 4 or even Leprechaun in Space where you had to deal with some strong, unearthly kind of animal that's trying to kill you in some way.
At one point, me and Mike were going to watch all the Leprechaun movies.
Yeah, and then I told Scott how many there were. He said, screw that theory.
There goes that bit.
Yeah. But you're not there alone, Scotty. You're there with Cyndi Lauper. And the only thing you have is an inspirational cat meme poster. You know, them ones where it's like, keep hanging on. So, Cyndi Lauper in the poster against the alien, and go.
I mean, clearly this is an easy one.
Of course.
You know, of course. It's almost so easy that I don't want to say it right away.
Obviously, I mean,
Cyndi Lauper.
Why give away the easy answer?
Poster alien. Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, I can only assume that Cyndi Lauper still has some athleticism left in her body. A lot of dance videos back in the day. A lot of a lot of preaching. A lot of singing. So she is a little bit older now, so I'm assuming that maybe she's not really into writing her own lyrics, but could use, you know, a lot of artists are coming back. A lot of artists, they come out with a new song. So I was thinking that maybe I could take the cat poster and whatever great, powerful slogan it has and help write a song with Cyndi Lauper using said slogan. Okay.
Oh.
Now, everybody knows that aliens love 80s music. I mean, it's just, it's a fact of life.
Very well-known fact. That's why the alien was so pissed off. It was in the 70s, that first movie.
Right, right.
It didn't understand.
So my plan is to establish Cyndi in this alien culture as this earthly phenomenon that they love. They can't get enough of this song. We're just writing the song from this cat-themed poster they're inspired by. The aliens are starting to really buy into Cyndi Lauper, so much so that I start promoting a concert on the spaceship that there's going to be a Cyndi Lauper performance that night where I could distract all the aliens to show up to Cyndi's show. Mm-hmm. While that's going on, get into the escape pod, right back to Earth.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I mean, Cyndi Lauper's dead in this scenario because she's just singing.
Yeah,
I mean,
screw her.
Yeah, you seem to be killing a lot of celebrities on this.
You didn't say. Listen, this is a horror movie. Most of the time, someone's dying.
Okay, okay.
Not many people escape. Usually it is one or two people that escape and live, and the rest of the supporting cast dies.
Okay, I hear you. All right. Next one, middle of the ocean, Scotty. This is a lot like Jaws or 47 meters down. You're just trapped in the middle of the ocean and there's some creature, likely a shark, out there just trying to eat you. And you have no communication back to the mainland. But you know what you do have? You have Bobby Bonilla. And you have a vase of flowers.
For a second, I thought Bobby Bonilla was my object.
So I pick up Bobby Bonilla and beat the living crap out of the shark. I'm like, how do you deserve all this money? You weren't that good in New York.
So Bobby Bonilla, me and him are floating. Are we swimming? Are we just stuck in the water? Are we inner tube together?
You can say you're in a shark cage. You can say you're on a boat that ain't moving anywhere. You just know that shark is trying to eat you.
All right. So clearly, Bobby Bonilla, the New York Mets have made him a wealthy man for the next 30 years, basically. Okay. Until 2035, I believe. Now, clearly, Bobby's got a lot of money, man. Bobby's got a lot of money. So I am simply going on faith that Bobby, prior to our shark excursion that me and Bobby went, because I won a random trip with a Met by entering a contest, and that was it, go shark diving with Bobby Bonilla. I thought it would be a cool story for the podcast. What I would do, I'm assuming Bobby spares no expense, and he had bought shark repellent. Bobby Bonilla.
Like Batman.
Right. So I'm assuming Bobby's just going to do a spray or two, get rid of the shark, and then as a thank you, I'm going to hand Bobby my flowers.
Oh, that's so sweet of you. Sounds like an insanely quick movie, but that was very sweet of what he did there.
Well, me and Bobby are good friends. That's what all I got to say.
Hey, the name of the game is survival. Nothing about extending entertainment, okay?
I like that. That was more plausible. Like, that was more unrealistic than me making a Cyndi Lauper cat meme song.
I could see both happening. You know, it's a wild, wild world.
True.
Another one, my friend?
All right, we'll do one more. My brain cannot probably come up with any more scenarios or I'm going to die.
All right, then. The Mad Doctor's house. Scott, you broke down. You went to this person's house.
you got knocked out, and this person wants to do experiments on you, much like the Human Centipede or Tusk or Get Out. This mad doctor has something in mind, and you're one of his subjects, but you're not alone, Scott.
We're going to shave his chest.
Yeah. You also have former Congressman David Duke with you, and your weapon is a box of matches. And I hand to God, this is what the random number generator came up with.
All right, well, clearly David Duke knows what to do with matches. So we'll just light up a cross and burn the doctor's house to the ground.
That seemed kind of simple.
It didn't have to be hard. David Duke, I mean, I'm assuming the doctor might want to do some experiments on him. Also, so I could also play the distraction game. But like, is David Duke strapped down on the table with me, or is he just kind of in the...
I'm guessing you're both in the same scenario. Most of these movies where they hand you a drink of water, you're knocked up, you knocked out, you wake up.
I'm knocked up too? Jesus.
Yep.
So that was
the experiment.
So I'm stuck with a baby with David Duke in a room and a book of matches.
And a box of matches. Yeah, so.
How about I just light myself on fire and kill myself?
I think that's how the Human Centipede ended. That one committed suicide, the other one naturally died, and the middle one was just there not knowing what to do as it ended.
I never made it. I watched like 20 minutes of that movie. I could not do it anymore.
I've never seen it fully. I just know what the ending is.
You spoiled it for yourself?
Yeah. Sorry, everybody. Spoiled your poop movie there.
Well, yeah. We're going to light on fire. Yep. My brain can't. I can't even talk.
You're just saying to yourself, why am I in this situation with David Duke again?
Yeah. Last time it was coffee. Now we're in the doctor's office. So, Mike, before we put a cap on this Halloween episode, it's been a fun one. You know, like I remember it was a while ago. But remember a while ago I was talking to you about how I had found out that there was a book genre that involved Amish love stories, and it was huge.
I do recall that, Scotty.
In fact, I was going to send you one. I forgot to do that. And we were going to read one together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is still. But so I was looking around and sticking with the Halloween theme. I found that there is a huge market, Mike, for romantic ghost stories.
Oh.
Like dozens and dozens and dozens of authors that involve hot stories between, like, usually a woman and a paranormal character. We've seen this kind of with vampires in recently. But there's a whole genre of kind of ghost stories, usually with the cover just being extremely jacked men, some of them with angel wings, some of them with – they all seem to have abs. I'll tell you that much. They all the ghosts, very good diet, good workout plan. I will tell you that.
Now, do they have shaved chests and pink marks from their
Not pink. They seem to have healed.
Oh, okay. Got
but I thought maybe we could read one or two of the plot points to some of these.
Of course.
So why don't we take a look at the first book, okay, The Gift of Ghosts.
Ooh.
By Tassamara. Akira has secrets, but so does the town of Tassamara. Akira Malone believes in scientific method, evolution, and Einstein's theory of relativity. And ghosts.
Ooh.
All the logic and reason in the world can't protect her from the truth. She can see and communicate with spirits, but Akira is sure that her ability is just a genetic quirk, and the ghost she encounters simply leftover electromagnetic energy. Dangerous electromagnetic energy. Zane Latimer believes in telepathy, telepathy, precognition, auras, and that playing Halo with your employees is an excellent management technique. He also thinks that maybe, just maybe, Akira can help his family get in touch with their lost loved ones. But will Akira ever be able to face her fears and accept her gift? Or will Zane's relatives be trapped between life and death forever?
Ooh. The suspense is delicious, Scotty. I don't know what's going to happen next.
Let's go to another book called To Catch a Spirit by Kari Pulkkinen. Logan Mitchell is an empath, and while his gift of reading people's emotions has come in handy in the business world, it's about to drive him insane. Literally, his ability triggers unbearable OCD attacks that leave him exhausted. And if his psychic power doesn't make him crazy, the ghost that's haunting him soon will. He's given up hope of ever having a normal life until he meets Allison. Mike, can you guess what Allison is?
A normal, beautiful neighbor.
Nope. Allison is a psychic medium drawn to Logan the minute she meets him. With her own empathic ability, she sees right through his vulnerable, powerful, sexy exterior to find kindness beneath. And damn that if it doesn't make him even sexier. But a harrowing incident from Allison's past has left her terrified of spirits, and the ghost in Logan's mansion is doing everything in its power to keep her away. Even if she can't overcome her fears, loving Logan will mean risking her life.
Some things are worth dying for, Scotty.
How about Ghostly Liaison? Avoiding love is hard. Catching a killer can be fatal. When Rob's sister passed away, she left him her dog and her house. He can handle the dog part, but he doesn't need another home. Especially a fixer-upper, the neighbors swear, is haunted. Then he meets Bridget, who's working on getting her life together after a car accident left her scarred in more ways than one. She can't pass up Rob's offer of free lodging, regardless of the shape it's in, or the roommate that's part of the package. She's never believed in ghosts, but now she's living with one who wants Bridget's help in catching a killer. There's only one problem. The killer has unfinished business.
Everyone sounds like tonight on Silk Stockings. I'm trying to think. I think in my old fifth grade book, I think I had a Halloween story.
Oh, man.
Maybe we can compare and contrast.
I'll just give you one more. Kari Pulkkinen must be a big author in ghost romance. She's got another one called Love and Ghosts.
Oh my.
She refuses to believe in ghosts. He makes a living on their existence. Love and the Big Easy shouldn't be hard. Ooh, we got a little New Orleans in here. Mm. When Emily Rollins accepts a dare to kiss a mad stranger at a charity ball, fireworks ignite. And she longs to learn more about the enchanting man. But Emily has lost so much already. Succumbing to his charm will turn her world inside out. Sean LeBlanc is a medium who runs the most popular haunted tour company in New Orleans. When Emily shows up on his ghost tour with no idea he's the mystery man from the ball, the long-buried emotions she unearthed in him are rekindled, and he's convinced he can learn to love again. The problem, Mike, is Emily does not believe in the supernatural.
Oh, no.
Just as Sean begins to open her mind to the existence of spirits and the possibility of love, a mysterious wooden box with a sinister power arrives on Emily's doorstep, threatening her sanity and her life. If Sean can't convince her ghosts are real, her disbelief will doom them both.
Oh, man. See, I'm doing like a ghost tour in Savannah in a couple days, so I hope it's just as sexy. You know, I'm gonna be very disappointed if it's not this sexy.
If not, you can certainly try to make it sexier.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's like the pirate ship cruise one I think we're on, but we'll see. And
yeah, for making me play that game, I'm gonna next Halloween, I'm gonna make you. How does Mike make it sexy? Make this go. You're with the same game. You're with a celebrity and a random object. Make it sexier, Mike.
All right. So I grab the umbrella and I bring Rip Taylor over.
So which would you rather read, Ghost Romance or Amish Romance?
I think Ghost Romance, just because there's like an added little spookiness to it. There's another side to it. I don't know how I'm going to get an extra side on Amish, you know, which is just like, okay, that's there.
You think you could ever love a ghost, Mike?
For a while, I think that was my only option for a while. I mean,
the ghost shaved my eyebrows. I swear it was the ghost.
I'm so lonely.
Well, guys.
Mike, you're just humping the air. That's not being with a girlfriend. I'm sorry. There is no ghost there.
Well, Mike, it's time to wrap up this Halloween extravaganza. We once again did it. Had a good time tonight. I hope you guys had a great Halloween. Mike, anything to promote before we get the hell out of here?
I am going to promote Team Octopus. That's a gym me and Izzy go to. They have great instructors, classes about jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, boxing, strength and conditioning. They have 5 locations in Georgia, so if you're interested in joining a gym and working out and doing a really great program, check them out. Their website is mmaatl.com.
All right, I'm going to promote. We don't get to promote them enough. We've been a part of their network for quite a while. They do a great job at tweeting our stuff, really kind of take some of the pressure off of us and promoting. And there's like a lot of great other podcasts on the network, and that is the BS Podcast Network. Go check them out. They have a whole bunch of different podcasts, not just ours, and give them a little like and some love on Facebook and Instagram. So guys, happy Halloween. I hope your Halloween is romantic and sexy and full of inanimate objects, and I hope you keep your chest hairy. So, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye.
Boo!
All right, Mike. So you had mentioned you think you had Halloween stories, and we took a little pause here, and turns out 5th grade Mike was even writing Halloween stories, romantic, maybe romantic novels, romantic ghost stories.
I'm not sure if it's romantic or not. I did get a smiley face, and the teacher gave me vampire teeth in the smiley face for the story. So you know it's good. It's worth the test of time, this story.
All right. So this story is approximately 30 years old, right?
Somewhere in that area. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see if it holds up. what's the title?
It's simply called Halloween.
Very, very original.
On Halloween, I went trick-or-treating after supper with my friend Jeremy. I dressed up like Count Dracula with a black cape, and I put sharp pointed teeth in my mouth. Jeremy.
Good adjectives. Good adjectives.
Yes. Jeremy was a ghost. He put a sheet over his head and cut out 2 eyes.
Wait. So the ghost put a sheet over his head?
Well, my friend Jeremy put a sheet over his head and cut out 2 eye holes.
Oh, I thought you were saying your friend Jeremy was a ghost, which would have been kind of a cool twist. But
that would have been nice. Who knows? I haven't read this in a while. Maybe that's the ending.
All right.
My mom took us to the other side of town to a place called Sleepy Time Hollow, where there are big mansions On a side note, I misspelled mansions.
I was also going to say, is that like copyright infringement? Like Sleepy Time Hollow.
If you keep adding other properties, in the end, it's not stealing.
Just like your story is called Halloween with a H-O instead.
Well, that's my horrible spelling, but I digress. The streets were dark and spooky. The full moon was out. We started to get scared from the creepy howling noises. We didn't want to stop because we were getting a lot of candy. We came to a big white mansion on a hill. There was bats flying everywhere.
Of course.
And moaning noises coming from the attic.
Oh, all right.
It looked like a party was going on inside. When we got up to the door and rang the doorbell, a guy in a black cape said, "Yes, what do you want?" We said, "Trick or treat." He grabbed us and pulled us inside and said, "Join the party." It was spooky and dark with cobwebs hanging all over. The organ was playing by itself and all kinds of people were dancing.
Here comes the romance part.
There were skeletons, devils, gremlins, ghosts, and vampires. Mm. We were having a good, and I forgot the word. I guess I was supposed to say time. We were having a good when.
Until the man in the black cape unzipped his pants.
When I saw a ghost going through the wall. I yelled to Jeremy, "Look, the ghost is real. Let's get out of here." We ran to the door, and all the monsters stopped us and said, "You must spend the rest of Halloween night here." They made us march upstairs to go to bed, and we hid under the blankets. When morning came, we got up. All the creatures were gone, and so was Halloween.
I like how it sounds like a repressed memory, because when you went upstairs to the bedroom, and you can't remember it. Oh, it was just over, and all the monsters were gone.
Nope. Monsters sent me to the room with under the blankets. Woke up. Halloween was over. All good, man. All good. No, the ghost took care of my eyebrow. I swear.
It's like Charlie from Always Sunny when he went. Wow. And the man in the black cape, his name was Phil Smith, and he's now on meganslaw.com. It creeped me out a little bit.
All right, yeah, Mike. I was kind of going like, where am I going with this? Yeah. What?